Welcome to Poetry Podcast with Paula and Sally. This is the first one that we are doing. I'm so excited to be here. My name is Sally Cragen. I serve as a city councilor in the city of Fitchburg, Massachusetts. I am also a writer and a longtime journalist. I'm here with my friend Paula Giaquinto.
Hi, everyone. It's really exciting to be here to launch our Poetry Read Aloud podcast adventure. I live in Fitchburg. I worked for many years in the Fitchburg Public Schools as an art teacher and a teacher and an administrator. And I get to meet Sally when she was a parent and a school committee member. And it was really as a result of the isolation through COVID that Sally came up with an idea that we'd visit our friends and neighbors in different kinds of housing configurations and share poetry read-alouds and singing and create a sense of community once again, once COVID was kind of under control, because the community really had spent so much time in isolation. So the joys of language, the interesting kinds of experiences poetry can generate, we're really excited to bring that to the larger community through a podcast. So this will be a very exciting, great, fun adventure, and I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you.
Well, I'm really happy to be here. I love podcasts. We are aiming for this one to be about a half an hour and, you know, just something fun for you to listen to while you're maybe doing housework or knitting because it's winter and I need new socks, or just, you know, to pass the time if you're driving. We'd like to begin by going back pretty much as far as we can. We're always looking for poems in the public domain, and we welcome folks who want to get in touch with us. And the best way to do that is on Facebook, find Creative Writing New England. And I'm on that, Paula's on that, and we'd love to hear what you think. We'll do special postings about this podcast. At some point, we'll put a Facebook-specific post together, a site so people can visit. But like I said, we're going to go way back. My favorite ancient Greek poet, aside from Homer, is Sappho. She was a Greek lyric poet. She died around 570 BCE. She lived on the island of Lesbos. And apart from that, she is full of legend and mystery. She didn't write much about politics at the time, but she wrote a lot about love. She has one poem that mentions a daughter named Cleis, also Cleis. She is someone that we have no pictures of, but we get a sense of her soul. So I'm going to start with a couple of really short poems. These were translated by Julia Dubnoff of Harvard University, edited by Greg Nagy, who was my professor. I was lucky enough to have him when I attended Harvard Extension School. I'd like to dedicate this first podcast that we're doing to Greg Nagy's assistant, a man named Kevin McGraw, who is British, who was an amazing teacher. All over Facebook, we're in mourning because he passed away recently. And he was an astonishing teacher and just gave all of us so much. But to begin, this is number 23. Like a sweet apple turning red, high on the tip of the topmost branch, forgotten by pickers. Not forgotten. They couldn't reach it. So, Paul, I thought that was a good poem to read because there are still some apples on the trees here in Fitchburg in New England.
That's right, Sally. It's interesting because at the time Sappho was alive, men ruled the arts world.
True.
And it must have been really unusual for a woman to write, to have a legacy of writing. I think you also mentioned along the way that she had a school for girls.
That's the legend, that she did. She did have a school for girls. And in fact, we do get the word lesbian from the island of Lesbos. But she is remarkable. I can't think of another character who certainly occupies her stature. But the little bits of fragments, she also, from her poems, we know that she was deeply attracted to much younger men, which is another factor, which would have been, you know, very out of keeping in that era of history. Any woman who was not a maiden was therefore a crone.
Right, right, right.
But
and relegated to following, not leading. I mean, that, you know, the myths, whether they're Greek or Roman myths and legends, are generally male-dominated, you know, except for maybe Cleopatra, and the portrayal of her in myth is not necessarily complimentary.
Well, and it also, and look at her fate, too.
Yes.
She couldn't have a kingdom and love at the same time. So contemplation of beauty is another really strong theme in ancient poetry in the classical era. This is number 24, and this is a spring poem. Like a hyacinth in the mountains that shepherds crush underfoot, even on the ground a purple flower. Yeah. So it retains its essence, even though it's been trampled by shepherds who are pretty, you know, humble, common folk, right? It's not about aristocrats.
Right.
But it's about this perfect, beautiful flower that is still a flower, even though it was trampled.
I like the idea that she's writing about the natural world, the simple things that people see and kind of disregard. I mean, the apple left on the tree, the flower that's trampled, but it still has beauty and meaning.
You know, that's a really good insight. And I think also the world of female poets, where they were relegated to, you know, observations of nature, contemplation of the divine, that's like a safe place for women's writing to be. And we hope in future podcasts to explore some of the great 19th century poets who actually lived in Fitchburg, Massachusetts, including Caroline Atherton Mason, whose house is actually visible. If you go out in the parking lot of FATV, you can look up on the hill, and there's where she lived. She wrote millions of words in her lifetime, I'm sure. But her subjects definitely were the, you know, the prayerful, the filled with, you know, not entreaties to the Almighty, but kind of reflections on, you know, very deep Christianity, which was such a huge part of New England culture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's interesting because there are contemporary or more contemporary poets like Mary Oliver, whose realm is that very meditative, nature-oriented work in plain speak.
Yes.
And then there are other poets who write, and women poets, and I'm thinking of the poem you shared by Lillian Taylor, that she was a student and then a teacher at Fitchburg High, about world events.
Right.
So that the Homeric epics and all of those ancient epic poems were written by men. Those were men's adventures, men's points of view. And it's just so interesting through the course of time, and even locally, we have some women poets who write with a women's point of view. I think it's fascinating.
Well, and it's an open field of study for the most part. Caroline Atherton Mason wrote a poem in the 1840s that goes, "Do they miss me at home? Do they miss me?" Twould be something, something, something. Sorry, we'll occasionally do something, something, something when we extemporize. But that got turned into a beautiful hymn, which was sung by both sides during the Civil War. So even the people at home, left at home, when the battle raged, they were in the battle also. And it is interesting, and here's Sappho, who really makes no allusion to any of the contemporary events. She writes about philosophy, she writes about emotions. She occasionally, you know, references like the little fragment about her daughter. She references things that are very close at hand, mm-hmm. not heroic, mm-hmm. more prosaic mm-hmm. in the best way. Mm-hmm. So we've got one more Sappho poem. I'm going to ask Paula, would you read number 34? It's just three little lines.
Okay. Death is an evil. That's what the gods think, or they would die. That's great.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Death is an evil. That's what the gods think, or they would die. Did you grow up loving Greek mythology?
Oh, I did. Oh, I when I was young, I lived in Worcester, and I took ballet lessons on, I don't know, Wednesday afternoons, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and I would go to the library before or after my dance lessons in Worcester, the old library, and I would go home with a book bag full of Greek and Roman mythology books. I thought they were fascinating.
Which god did you most identify with or relate to?
Oh, I can't.
I had a few.
Well, actually, I just plain old like Zeus.
Huh.
I like that mountaintop in charge. Lightning bolt motif. I just thought that was the best.
So, you know, Zeus is unavoidable.
Yeah.
If you're going to be thinking Greek gods, you start at Zeus and then you move down the line.
Yeah.
I loved Hephaestus, the god of the forge, who was lame and was married to Aphrodite, and who was constantly at the blacksmith's, you know, anvil, and he created things. So he was a maker of things. He liked to craft, and I was a little child who looked like Wednesday Addams for most of my childhood with horn-rimmed glasses. And I liked making things, and I had nerdy girl friends who, Laura Opie and Frances Levy, and we loved making things. So I really liked Hephaestus, but I also liked Artemis. So Artemis, goddess of the moon, sister of Apollo, she had the arrow, she was silvery, and she was a maiden, and she's pretty independent.
Yeah,
so I thought she was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
So speaking of independent, we now jump ahead to, what are we, the 1830s now?
Well, I when I was thinking about this launch of our Read Aloud, I was thinking, okay, there is really a non-zero chance of bumping into poetry. It's everywhere.
Yes, it is.
It's everywhere. You know, everyday song lyrics and movies and plays, school, you know, when you think of Shakespeare or Hamilton, celebrations, recalling dreams, listening to your dog talk, it's really everywhere if you're open to it. And as I was thinking about what would be an interesting or fun, how would we share that love of language and make it approachable, I was thinking of the familiar. And I know Halloween's gone. We just had that as a holiday for those folks who celebrate it. But Edgar Allan Poe is one of, I think, the most familiar poets, you know, born in Boston and then lived around the world. And The Raven, I think, is one of his most known poems. So I was thinking, and I'm going to read pieces of it because it's a very long poem. But the quoth the raven nevermore is iconic.
It is, and I think viewers might want to bear in mind that ravens are different from crows. They are larger, they are even smarter, and there are some very interesting naturalists who have lived among them in the wild. But where Edgar Allan Poe is writing, he was a very urban person, and he found the menace in the most innocuous things.
Really, and you know, he grew to become, or his legend grew to become so well regarded that the Edgar Awards are now distributed in his name, awarded in his name for, I believe it's mystery writers.
Yes.
But that sense of gothic, kind of creepy, back of your neck, hair-raising horror, without it being gory, without it being explicit, I think is, and to me, the Raven sort of personifies that regarding Edgar Allan Poe. So it's romanticism kind of poetry, but it's also that horror gothic.
Beautiful.
And so the Raven starts, it really does raise the hair on my neck. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. 'Tis some visitor, I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. Only this, and nothing more. Distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entering entrance at my chamber door, some late night visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more. Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. Sir, I said, or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door, darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into the darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming, dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before, but the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping somewhat louder than before. Surely, I said, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind and nothing more. I just getting through that part, it's like, oh, I can just picture that. No, there's nothing there. It's creepy, it's ghostly, it's eerie, it's compelling, it's, and the words he uses, the sounds, the S's, the repetition, it just keeps that sense. It's almost like that buzzing in your head when you hear bees in a hive, that it's, what is that? I can't quite identify it. It makes me uncomfortable.
I think, and he's off balance. And then the other thing is he's filled with guilt. Like the narrator, his anxiety is just so on the surface. And anxiety is a word that we think of as this modern construct. But there's Edgar Allan Poe vibrating, like as you put it, like, you know, with as if he's hearing bees in a hive.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, when you read it on a page, the rhyme makes sense, the language, you know, it's a little old-fashioned, but the language makes sense. But when you read it out loud and all that hissing comes through and the repetition, and, you know, he's the bird comes in and perch upon the bust of Pallas. It's all the way a ghost would be in your room. And then, of course, the ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, an ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore, quoth the raven. Nevermore. I don't know what I'd do if that happened. I mean, really. And then that repetition of the bird said nevermore. Startled at the stillness, broken by reply so aptly spoken of nevermore. But the raven still beguiling, croaking nevermore. That I sat in guessing, but no syllable expressing. Except it does, of course. And then, as the end, prophet, I said, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden who the angels name Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. It's just. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore. Ah, I love that.
It's Edward Gorey, the cartoonist.
Yeah.
You know, it's that sensibility. It's really the Gothic. It's our second go at the Gothic. The first go was the cathedrals of, you know, the Middle Ages and early Renaissance or before the Renaissance. And then the second, of course, was the pre-Raphaelites, like that Gothic. And then somewhere along the 80s, Gothic became a thing again. But right. Poe is so precise with his diction, I guess. And it's really, I mean, all of that is really short sentences, which people were not doing short sentences in the 19th century when he was writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I find, you know, some of his words are words of that era. And, you know, the reference is Gilead and the bust of Pallas and Seraphim. And, you know, they're definitely not contemporary plain speak. On the other hand, they repeat either the rhyme or the syllabication, so they're perfectly understandable in place. And they continue that sense of mystery. It's kind of like that, I want to know, I'm afraid. There's a mystery, I want to find it out, but there is no resolution. And so I can understand why he became a central figure in American literature. And people, I mean, I know classrooms still use his poetry all the time. You know, Annabelle Lee is another one that's, you know, has a twist at the end. I find his work very entertaining and compelling.
I agree wholeheartedly. So we're just about at 25 minutes now, and I think we should probably wrap things up. We will have more podcasts. I'm planning to do some Robert Louis Stevenson, who was a favorite of mine from childhood. And I'm sure that also Emily Dickinson, someone Paula and I both really like. Who else do you want to do, Paula?
Oh, well, I certainly would like to chat about some of my favorites. Billy Collins is contemporary. His poems are wonderful. Brian Bilston is a British poet.
Yes.
Usually humorous, but he's a masterful, brilliant poet that plays with language. And that's one thing about poetry that, you know, it can be about the small moments, like Sappho talking about apples and that flower that remains beautiful, trampled or not, or world events. Poetry's everywhere, but that playfulness or the provocative nature of its language. So Mary Oliver, a magnificent poet, Pablo Neruda. I think Tracy K. Smith, who's teaching at Harvard right now, Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yeah, she's someone, again, I'm going to have to heat up my email and texting to see about getting permissions from everyone. Yeah. Again, if you'd like to be in touch with us, really the best way is go to Facebook, Creative Writing New England, those four words, Creative Writing New England. That will get to me and Paula. I'm reachable through the city of Fitchburg. I serve as a city councilor, so you can go to the city website and just click on me there, and then I'll write you back from my Gmail. We've got all kinds of wonderful things to do. But I want to give credit, of course, to FATV. Thank you, Keith. Thank you, Nate. Thank you. This is a remarkable opportunity for us to come in here in this cozy studio with our bits and pieces of text and hopefully reach a big audience. So if you like this, we'd love to hear from you. I'd also like to thank my brother, Hal Cragen, who's cool about us using his music. And we're going to play something from a record called Refresh. So we're going to walk out on that sound, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.